Makeshift Stories presents Way Station.
A place out of time, where things are not always as they appear. Sit back, relax, and open your imagination as we present Episode 37, Way Station, Caught. Prologue. This is the fifth installment in the series Way Station. If you haven't heard the previous stories, we'd recommend that you go back and listen to 23, The Europa Cafe, 27, Surveillance, 31, The Archives, and 35, The Shadows, before listening to this episode. The story to date. Maya and Tim live in an alternate future, where kids over 8 must work for a living. Shortly after an apparently random traffic accident, Tim's parents died of their injuries, leaving him alone and in debt for the medical expenses. Unable to pay, the insurance company auctioned off his obligations to a family who owns a cafe, where he now has to work off the debt until their daughter, Maya, finishes college. Tim maintains the Europa's global net access point and develops an interest in obsolete net systems. Finding the code for an ancient protocol called Gopher, he builds a site and places it on the cafe's server. Soon after Tim discovers that someone has been accessing his site, two mysterious customers show up at the cafe, knowing more than they should about Maya. Spooked, Tim and Maya fear that they're being spied on, but don't understand why. While out for a walk, Tim is sent a mysterious message through his enhanced reality glasses, warning him to check the cafe's server records, then meet in an alley the next morning. Tim examines the logs and finds that someone has doctored them to make it look like customers have been connecting to unauthorized sites in violation of the cafe's net access license. After removing the false entries, Tim takes Maya to meet the author of the message, who turns out to be a wealthy eccentric lady called Anita from an old Way Station family. Anita dresses like a bag lady to disguise herself and claims to be part of an ancient group that is trying to preserve the true history of the world. To convince Maya and Tim, she takes them to a hidden archive of printed books and shows them how, over time, a secret organization she calls the Presence has been altering the official digital historic records and subtly influencing events. When the two spooky customers from the cafe show up in the lobby of Anita's apartment building, Anita forces Tim and Maya to leave through a disused fire escape. As the two make their way back to the cafe, Maya feels like they're being followed. And when they arrive, they find that Maya's mother has mysteriously disappeared, leaving the shop open. Following a hunch, based on the odd total left on the cash register, Tim starts examining the cafe's server logs and discovers that they've been tampered with again. This time, records of illegal online activities have been added to his and Maya's access files. When net regulatory bureau agents show up at the door, Tim tries to delete the logs, then he and Maya escape through the back door. And now we present tonight's story, Caught. The Northern Daily still more or less ran along the original route that had been laid down 3 centuries ago. Although, in the intervening decades, the line was upgraded many times, the thawing ground had proved to be a nightmare. In a last-ditch attempt to stabilize the rail bed, engineers in the middle of the last century had elevated the tracks on concrete stilts. Many parts of the line were still supported by this web of crumbling concrete and rebar. And now the trains were forced to slow down as they traveled over these remaining sections. Once, there had been talk of building a highway in the decades before the last drops of Arctic oil had been pumped out and the last of the tar sands mined. The resulting fuel crisis had ended that plan once and for all. With the astronomical cost of synthetic jet fuel, plane flights were all but out of reach, except for the ultra-wealthy. So the rail link had become the only practical route to the exploding northern economy. And crucial points along the line, like Way Station, had been swept up in a groundswell and placed back on the map. The passenger cars stood impatiently on the elevated siding as an express freight steamed south. Tim looked mindlessly out of the window at a gash plowed into the endless aspen and ash forest that would someday become the bed of the new double-tracked line. Still mentally and physically exhausted from the craziness of the previous day, he drifted back to sleep. The rattling of tightening hitches methodically made its way down the train. Then the gentle rocking of the cars on uneven tracks started again, as a monotonous landscape of drying muskeg and scruffy trees began to slip by. The motion of the cars had put Maya to sleep, despite the tornado of thoughts that still raged through her mind. There hadn't been time to plan. They just ran, following the only clue that they had. Her parents had been in contact with a real estate agent in New Hudson Beach, a resort town on the shores of Hudson Bay, then vanished without a trace, in such a hurry that they had left the cafe completely open. Tim had discovered the altered server logs, passcodes, correspondence records, and visits to banned sites had been added to their personal access histories. He barely had time to dump the records before the net regulatory agents had shown up at the Europa's front door. With the agents pounding on the glass, Tim had been forced to act with expedience and knew that what he had done would only delay the inevitable. A forensic audit of the server's storage would quickly expose the incriminating evidence. Only 3 days ago, an odd couple had shown up at the cafe. And, since then, Maya felt like her world had started to fracture. She and Tim had met an eccentric lady named Anita, from one of Waystation's oldest wealthy families, who claimed that a secretive organization was altering history, and may have engineered the death of Tim's parents. She claimed that Tim and Maya had been dragged into an ancient conflict. When the odd couple showed up again at the old woman's apartment building, they had been forced to leave through the back door, and had subsequently been followed back to the cafe. Her parents were gone, and now she finally resigned herself to the fact that for some inexplicable reason, she and Tim had been set up and forced to run. But who, beside the net regulatory bureau they were running from, and why, was still a mystery. After Tim had pulled her out of the cafe, they slipped into the back lane, then over the bridge to the south side of the Boyne River. There were no other bridges across, so Maya and Tim had waited in a small park and watched for their pursuers, but none came. It was then that Tim had told her about the other things that he had seen in the server logs. Enough evidence had been planted to tie them to a banned radical group that was wanted for planning a protest in which several bystanders had accidentally been killed. They both knew that before the regulatory bureau recovered the deleted files, they needed to have something more plausible than being innocently caught in a struggle between two non-existent groups. From the park, they had taken a taxi to Maya's parents' house, but found that it had been ransacked. Again, they had been forced to flee when the regulatory agents arrived. They had made a snap decision to follow their only clue and discreetly left for New Hudson Beach. An hour later, they arrived at the entrance to Union Station, only to be accosted by a greasy street person who tried to block their way.
"Young lady, can you help a disadvantaged person?"
His breath had smelt revoltingly sour, and Maya had tried to step around him, but he moved to block both their ways.
"A quarter for this bag. That's all I ask, lady. That's all I need. You won't regret it. It's a good luck charm for your trip."
He pushed the tattered bag into her face, then leaned aggressively in so she couldn't escape the stench. Trying to avoid a scene, Tim had fished some change from his pocket, then grabbed the slimy bag. The ragged man immediately gave way and yelled after them,
"It only works if you look before you get on the train. Remember, you've got to look before you get on."
His voice was lost as they swept through the revolving glass doors into the cool interior under the great copper dome of the arrivals and departure lounge. Maya had turned, relieved to see that a security guard had stopped the man and was forcing him back out into the stream of pedestrians on the hot sidewalk. They were about to toss the bag in the garbage when Tim noticed the roughly scrawled letters on the outside. Open before boarding. AA.
Anita Ashton?
Tim questioned, rolled up the top of the bag, looked in, and guided Maya over to a bench along the sidewall where they could sit and talk unnoticed. In the bag he'd found two new handhelds and an odd black device. Tim reached in, carefully removed one of the handhelds, then touched the ID pad. He didn't expect anything to happen. All devices were keyed to their owner's fingerprints, but to his surprise, it immediately sprung to life. Its message icon was impatiently flashing. Tim tapped the screen, causing words to scroll on. The handhelds are credit-enabled. Use them to cover your costs. Get rid of your own. They're being tracked. Hold the black box in both hands and press the button. Your identity implants will be rewritten. You need to do this before you are scanned entering the departure platform. And when you are done, remember to throw the coder in the trash can. You can't be caught with it. The message immediately erased itself. When Tim checked the transaction log, it was empty. The handhelds had been altered to erase their records. Both Tim and Maya had known that it was highly illegal to tamper with the ID markers everyone had embedded in their hands at birth. Before performing the wipe, there was still a chance that if caught, they might be able to prove their innocence. But once their IDs had been altered, they would cross the line, and there would be no chance at all. As they debated what to do, the choice was made for them when a large group of bureau agents burst through the front entrance of the station and began to scan passengers at the platform gates. Maya had gone through the sequence in her head over and over since they had boarded the train. Now Tim was crumpled up in a heap, asleep on the opposite bench, occasionally twitching. She wondered if his mind was burning with the same looping thoughts. Then shifted position and tried to sleep. The hydraulic lines hissed in complaint as the engineer abruptly applied the brakes, forcing the cars to clank together like a row of dominoes. The sudden lurching caused bags of half-eaten snack food to slide off the seat and jerked Maya out of a full dream. Reality slowly seeped in, and she realized she was still on the train. Maya leaned over and craned her neck to see out the car window towards the engine. A dilapidated platform and a small rusting sign with the word Gillum barely legible greeted her gaze. Behind that, a rudimentary, dented sheet metal building was perched on rotting wooden stilts that protruded at irregular angles from the once boggy soil. Maya turned her head toward the rear of the train and noted that a clearing had been carved out of the dead skeletons of the ancient boreal forest, now too far south to survive. In the middle lay a crude, disused runway. Through the scrub brush, now crowding up to the gravel strip, Maya could make out the foundations of old buildings and streets. She poked Tim again.
Why would there be a runway out here?
Tim stretched out the last of his sleep and peered out. In the distance, a small jet had begun its final approach. The runway seemed almost too short to him. But the sleek-looking plane managed to skid to a stop in a cloud of dust.
Man, it would have cost a fortune to get a small plane out here,
Tim wondered aloud.
Who could afford that?
A few seconds later, the intercom crackled.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Hudson Line would like to apologize for the unexpected delay. We've been requested to stop to pick up several VIP passengers. The layover will be very brief and should not affect any connections further north. However, if you have a tight transfer, please talk to the purser in the dining car, and she will ensure that you get express clearance through travel control in New Hudson. Again, we apologize for the delay.
Maya's handheld began to buzz. Tim shaded his eyes, to make it easier to peer through the dusty haze kicked up by the plane, then seemed to freeze as the passengers began to disembark.
Maya, they're Bureau agents,
he nervously whispered, hoping that none of the other passengers would hear. Maya's handheld continued to impatiently buzz, then Tim's joined in. They both distractedly dug out their devices and thumbed them on. They've come to ID everyone on the train. They're looking for two young people traveling together. We managed to change your photo IDs in time, so they don't know what you look like. When a woman asks to trade seats, do it. We've altered the seating arrangements. The message immediately erased itself.
Must be someone on the train. There's no outside connections here,
Tim muttered. But before they could look around to see who might have sent it, a middle-aged businesswoman approached them from the back of the car. She wore the dull but well-tailored clothes so common among professionals in the North. Polite but assertively, she gestured to the seat numbers stenciled on the luggage rack, then icily glared at Maya.
I believe, young lady, that you are sitting in my seat.
She said it in a way that removed any possibility of discussion, then stood it impatiently aside, blocking the aisle forward as Maya gathered up her things and whispered to Tim.
Tim, message me. Seat 30B, back there,
the woman sternly added and pointed to the back of the car. Maya quickly left. The train started up again with a mechanical jerk. Tim briefly considered trying to make small talk with the businesswoman, who had unfolded a thin screen and had started reading a popular Iqaluit financial magazine. But one icy glance told him to mind his own business. As the train reached cruising speed, the intercom came on again. This time, it was not the concierge.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask for your cooperation with our agents, as we do an identity check of all passengers. There is no need to be concerned. This is a routine inspection to check our security measures at our stations. Our goal is to keep you safe.
Tim instinctively knew this was just a ruse to find them and shrunk into his seat. The businesswoman leaned over and whispered,
Hey, relax. You need to sit up and look calm, or you might tip them off.
Then she added,
Don't worry. Everything is under control.
She subtly squeezed Tim's hand to reassure him and looked over her shoulder at Maya, who was agitated but apparently managing better than Tim. Tim looked out the window trying to calm the butterflies in his stomach. The businesswoman turned back to her thin screen and tapped in some commands. Maya's handheld vibrated in her pocket. She nervously pulled it out and read, We have this under control. Don't draw attention to yourself. Play a game or watch a show on your handheld, but whatever you do, don't look up until they ask you to swipe your hand. Maya casually put on her headset, leaned back in her seat, and closed her eyes. After what seemed like an eternity, the door at the front of the car slid violently open, and two gray-suited railway security police flowed in, followed by a tall, armed, plainclothes Net Regulatory Bureau agent. The familiar holographic crest of the Bureau appeared to hover threateningly in front of the glossy badge pinned to the big agent's dark suit. The relaxed mood in the car immediately disappeared as the three began to interrogate each passenger and scan their hands. The Bureau agent scrutinized each result, then nodded to move on. Two rows in front of Tim, the agent examined the records of a sweating middle-aged man, talked intensely into his handheld, tapped in a summons for some past violation, then asked for the man's hand and coded his offense onto his chip. Tim knew that the man would be tracked and picked up if he didn't immediately report to the courts after they arrived in New Hudson. The tension in the car immediately rose several notches. Most people at some point in their lives would have inadvertently behaved online in some manner that might be of interest to the Regulatory Bureau. Tim willed himself to look calm and hoped that the people who had created his new profile knew what they were doing. But the butterflies refused to settle down and grew uncontrollably in his stomach, threatening to break out in a nervous shiver. It grew worse as the two rail police squeezed down the aisle to stand beside his row. The larger and more intimidating of the two looked at his handheld, the seat number on the rack above Tim's head, then glared at him in a way that made Tim feel as if the man could reach into his mind and pull out his guilt. Tim's heart pounded in his ears. "They'll see through me," he thought.
Patrick Mason? You're from Way Station, eh? What takes you to New Hudson?"
He paused for emphasis.
"On your own. And in the middle of a work week at that."
Tim didn't immediately answer. He didn't know what it might say about Patrick in the faked ID records.
Tim
began to stumble. He felt drops of sweat trickle down under his arms.
Spoiled rich kid on a beach trip, huh?
The security officer muttered impatiently, tapped his handheld, and waited. He raised an eyebrow as the results of his query were displayed, then passed the screen to the bureau agent. For a moment, Tim considered what the best escape route might be, but he was trapped in the window seat. The bureau agent was taking a long time to look at the data. Too long, Tim thought. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught the businesswoman casually pressing the lower corner of her thin sheet, and almost immediately an explosion of activity erupted six rows back as a young teenage woman and man scrambled to their feet, desperately making for the rear car door. Without a word, the bureau agent and the rail police instinctively scrambled after them. Tim was still shaking when the mysterious businesswoman gently asked him to pull down the window shade and reassuringly placed her hand on his shoulder. A few minutes later, the train screeched to a halt, causing people standing in the aisle to stumble and loose packages to fall from the overheads. The intercom cracked to life again, this time with the relaxed voice of the concierge.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for yet another delay. There's nothing to worry about, just some debris on the track from last night's storm. Once the tracks are cleared, we'll be on our way. As a gesture of our goodwill, the head conductor has authorized free drinks for the next hour in the forward lounge car."
Tim noticed that the lips of the woman beside him subtly curled up for a moment. He hoped that her colleagues had escaped from the train safely. At 1 a.m., the sun hung suspended just above the scruffy trees that clung to the southern horizon, casting immensely long shadows across the tracks as the train eased into New Hudson Station. The air brakes hissed and the train lurched to a final rest. Tim heard the porters unlatch the doors in the breezeways, and warm, fresh, salty sea air began to invade the car. The rail police had remained on board, constantly patrolling the train, scrutinizing passengers, trying to unnerve them to shake out some other offender. Finally, as they had started rolling into the station, the interrogation stopped. Tim was about to go back and talk to Maya when his handheld vibrated. He pulled it out and looked at its screen. The message read, "Meet at the station entrance after you clear travel control." Maya pulled her headset off and looked up the car, but Tim and the businesswoman had already gone. She caught the back of the woman's suit as she exited the breezeway. It made sense. They'd have to go through travel control separately in case the bureau was still looking for two young teens traveling together. Maya swallowed her nerves, then followed the gathering current of humanity that dutifully flowed out onto the platform and down into the basement of the station. She let herself be swept along into a queue in front of a particularly stern-looking control officer. Maya looked several rows over just in time to notice Tim motion through. She was relieved to see that he had made it. Tim had looked so stressed on the train that she thought he would give himself away. Maya had gone through travel control dozens of times with her parents. Growing up in the summer, when the heat in New Way Station became unbearable, her family had rented a cottage in New Hudson Beach. She knew the routine well, but that was as Maya, not as Tara Friesen. all too soon she found herself standing at the front of the line, waiting her turn. The control officer finished making some notes on an unseen screen, then impatiently motioned her forward. Maya tried to look relaxed as she defiantly walked up to the aging booth, glazed in grimy shatterproof glass.
"Put your hand on the scanner,"
the agent mechanically demanded.
"Purpose of trip?"
"To meet my parents,"
Maya replied, then added,
"They're here looking for summer homes."
"Occupation?"
Maya looked indignantly back at him.
"I'm in college. I have a work exemption."
The control agent furrowed his brow.
That's not on your record."
Maya realized she'd forgotten that she was supposed to be Tara.
"What college?"
he demanded. Momentary fear surged through her. She'd been caught. She should have realized that the fake IDs would have been based on the typical young teen. School at her age was an exception. Most kids had to work until they were 20. She cursed herself for being so stupid and admitting the truth, but it was too late. She'd have to bluff her way through. With as much irritation in her voice as she could muster, she curtly replied,
"Westwood and Way Station. They probably forgot to update the records again. I wish my parents would send me to a better place."
The control officer irritably glared at her.
"Hey, you should feel lucky they can afford to pay for a work replacement so you can even go to school. Wait here."
He abruptly left the booth through a small back door, and an armed guard moved up to make sure she stayed put. Maya hoped her bluff had worked. After probably what was only a minute, but seemed like 10, the agent returned. He swiped a small card through a writer and handed it to her.
"We've been having trouble accessing the records from that college. You'll have to keep this visa with you."
He waved her through and called for the next person. Maya shoved the card defiantly into her pocket and quickly walked to the station entrance. Through the glass, she saw Tim anxiously pacing, checking up and down the street. Maya pushed through the door into the heat and grabbed Tim by his arm. He jumped, but smiled when he saw who it was. His tension visibly drained away. Maya wanted to put as much distance between themselves and the station as soon as possible. So before saying anything, she tried to drag Tim down the stone stairs, but found her way was blocked by the back of a tall, thin man. She was about to say something rude to this obstinate person when he spoke first.
"Hello. You'll be coming with me. By the way, you don't have a choice."
He turned around and smiled. It was the man who had followed them on the street in Way Station.
Thanks for listening to this month's story, Caught. If you like the webcast, please tell your friends about us or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com or send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. All sound effects and backgrounds are licensed from soundsnap.com, and the opening and closing theme is PodSafe Music, licensed from premiumbeat.com. Makeshift Stories is released under Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.